back for another edition of a Habs 365 Draft Podcast. And joining me as usual is Grant McKeag. And Grant, first of all, good afternoon.
Hey, Brian.
How did you enjoy the first night of the playoffs?
Well, I got Winnipeg guys in my pool, so...
It's always about the pools for everybody, isn't it?
That worked out okay, but I also got L.A. guys in my pool, and they got shut out, so...
Yeah, the zero on the board is even harder than the loss sometimes.
Yeah, I didn't even watch the third period. I just knew they weren't going to score a goal. It was, like, putting me to sleep. Actually, I did fall asleep, so I decided on rest above watching my pool guys get shut out, you know.
It's funny because I spent a little part of today watching or at least paying attention to the Bob Nicholson press conference, the kind of the figurehead very much
on
like
show.
Jeff Molson. And
they
call a press conference within 2 hours like they've got this amazing announcement to make, and instead all he says is that Peter Chiarelli is going to stay on.
It sure got the speculation going, eh?
Yeah, well, obviously, right? Chiarelli spoke yesterday, and then all of a sudden the next day you call an impromptu to say absolutely nothing. So, I mean, I found it kind of interesting because it is obviously these days, because the team finished 28th, a lot of criticism for the Habs. But, man, that organization can't even get their press conferences in line.
Well, I thought it a little odd that they'd let Chiarelli talk and then the next day fire him. That didn't seem like, you know, that didn't add up, but...
But why
was it maybe they'd
there
at least...
then that day if he felt like... I mean, there must have been some sort of feedback or fallback position there that they felt was necessary. Can you imagine if Molson called another one right now? What would everybody assume?
Yeah, I guess that they maybe signed Balzer to another extension or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I thought they were going to announce that Lucic was going to be taking speed skating lessons in the offseason.
Well, that was one thing that Chiarelli said yesterday, was that he was really happy with his skating. So,
yeah.
I mean, you thought there were some easy things to kind of mock Bergeron for. That's not anything in the realm.
That would have been like saying
skating was good.
That would have been like saying they thought Dwight King was a speedster last year in the playoffs. You know, I don't
or
think it would have flew.
Yeah, or this year Altner was outstanding, and I really liked the way he played. I mean, but seriously, as an equivalent, that would have been about the statement. Lucic had a goal in the last 46 games,
but he was skating fast.
But that's right. It wasn't skating that was the problem. He just wasn't finishing all those amazing chances that I never saw watching in pain until I could take no more. There was an idiot on Twitter that predicted the Oilers in November when they won 5 straight was going to make the playoffs.
Don't be so hard on yourself.
Yeah, that's right. I was the idiot.
I'm the one that...
By January, it's like, find something else to pin here.
Well, there was somebody that last fall just insisted that I give point predictions on the Habs, so that didn't turn out very well.
No,
either.
Predictions
I'm
hard.
Now you know why I was reluctant.
Well, I'll tell you what, where predictions go, Grant, it's kind of interesting because I actually, before the year began, have done something 3 years in a row now, and I've invited the 27,000 people that follow me on Twitter to give me 5 predictions. And if you get all 5, no, not even bold. I never said bold. I just said 5 predictions. And
right.
In 3 years in...
I'm saying that you said bold so I can protect myself.
I don't think I said bold. Tell one guy that the Habs playing 82 games was not sufficient as a prediction. You know, you got to be a little more out there than that. And there was one guy that just gave me 5 things that had to happen. You know what I mean? Play at least one game. The Habs will play 82 games. Gallagher will go into the corner hard. You know, it's just like, dude.
Oh, okay. I guess they weren't bold predictions then, yeah.
No, exactly. Not good enough. But the point is, to talk about predictions and how hard they are, in hindsight, everybody's amazing. But in foresight, in 3 years, I've said every single time, if you get 5 of 5, I will give you $50.
Yeah.
And I have not worried for even a second
Right.
And as much as everybody said they knew that the Habs were lousy, 95% of the predictions going into the year in September last year were very, very positive predictions about how the Canadians would do. And in essence,
yeah,
I was among the most negative. I remember the one podcast we had where you and I were talking and I was going 92, and you were like, well, they won't make the playoffs at 92. And I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to say that. You know, but
yeah, well, you were closer, but even you were off a fair bit.
By a long bit.
Oh, well, I said 102 or something.
Yeah,
but anyway,
I'm just trying to make the point that, you know, nobody saw this coming. But anyway, enough of that.
No.
Okay. What did you think?
I feel better.
We talked about Chiarelli. What do you think of Bergevin's performance on Monday? I didn't think he did very well, but I thought Jeff Molson did exceptionally well.
I didn't like Bergevin's attitude at the press conference.
Attitude about attitude.
I was, you know, I was disappointed in his attitude. I think he, you know, he... anyway, okay, I was trying to be funny there, but... Yeah,
no, I got it.
Yeah, okay. Well, you're supposed to laugh, but anyway.
Well, I said his attitude about attitude.
Yeah, okay. It was, it was disappointing that he basically, I think, called out the coaches and the, by going that with the disappointing attitude line, like, I don't know, when you're starting games with Logan Shaw as one of your top three centers and, you know, Carl Ellesmer in your top four and, you know, Schlemko and all these guys, it's hard to have a great attitude, you know. I think part of it had to do with what he provided the team. But, like, you got to have the skill. And I think that he didn't own up to that. He went with, the attitude, which is to say that, well, it was the player's fault and the coach's fault for not getting them into the right attitude and them not having the right attitude. Well, Bergevin, for the past several years, has, you know, the MO has been to pick up players with character, players with that attitude, you know, maybe even that aren't the most skilled but have great attitudes. Well, if all of these players with character that he picked up that were supposed to have great attitudes didn't have good enough attitudes, well, that's on him. That's not, you know, he's trying to deflect it to other people, but it's really, it all deflects back to him. So I thought he was a little overly defensive and didn't want to kind of own up to the fact that he didn't provide this team with enough skill. There wasn't, they needed to find a puck moving defenseman, that could play in a first pairing and a first line center, and they haven't done it. So, you know, they've never properly replaced Subban. I mean, I love Weber, and I mean, him being injured, you couldn't have predicted that, but he still needed a puck moving partner on the first pairing, and you know. With Markov there, you still had that to a certain extent, but if we remember correctly, Markov didn't really play with Weber all that much. He was on the second pairing for the most part. So they really needed that first, you know, the puck-moving mobile first pairing defenseman that could anchor the top pairing with Weber was not there. And when you start with that, it's such an important part, the puck retrieval, the mobility, the getting the puck on the player's stick coming out of the zone is just, you see it, you know, more and more at the NHL. It's just such a key ingredient. And for an ex-NHL defenseman and such, I mean, Carrier is an ex-NHL defenseman, Daniel, Julian, this team that's full of all, you know, former pro NHL defensemen, and they didn't, you know, foresee that was going to end up being such a pivotal hole, and not addressing it with $11 million in cap space all year. That's on him. That's not on the team. That's not on team's attitude. I mean, I think that there was lots of there was no issue with this team trying. Like I've heard that from many NHL scouts all year. Like the team's trying. They just don't have horses, and that to me, I think he needed to say that they need to upgrade the skill. That was what I wanted to hear, and I didn't hear it. Even though it's obvious, and I'm sure he's going to try. That's what I think we needed to hear.
Yeah, or the plan. They keep talking about, we have a plan, we have a plan. I would like to have had some semblance. I know they can't divulge the plan completely because there are things that can't be said. We all know this. We know that you can't say that you're interested in particular players and name them, obviously, because if you do, that's tampering because the players are still involved in either the playoffs or are still under contract, so we know that. And we also know that you can't throw players under a bus. And you can't say Carl Alsner was horrible. We know that. And then expect that Carl Alsner is going to either fetch something for you in a trade. And the same goes with Jordy Benn. If you want to get something for him in a trade, you can't disparage your assets. So I think we're all smart enough to know that he's limited in scope to what he can say. But you can say... You can say something to make the fan base think that you're on top of it. And I think that's all the fan base wants. Just say a sentence that makes me feel like you're on top of it. Like what you just said. Like the sentence simply, we need to upgrade our skill level. You know what I mean? How hard would those six or seven words have been? And I think that would have placated 90% of the fans. We need to upgrade our skill level. That's it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That, what is it, like... And if you've got a follow-up question on that, like let's say one of the reporters followed up with, what do you mean? You would just say, well, you know, I can't tell you exactly what I mean. You know, I can't tell you exactly what players I'm interested in. And that would have been the end of it.
And you're not you're not throwing people under the bus in that
sense.
And also, I mean, it's assumed that with a top five or six pick, you're going to upgrade the skill there.
Yeah. Like, and, how do you think the defense feels, or the players that heard that? How do they feel about that, hearing that they had a bad attitude?
Yeah, that's
crazy.
Well, I mean, I don't think. I really don't know of many players on the team that had a bad attitude, to be honest.
I didn't see it at all this year. I didn't see a bad attitude. I didn't see guys loafing. Like, I didn't see it. There was the odd shift that Drouin, I thought, could have hurried to the bench a little bit, back checked just a little bit every once in a while, but I didn't think it was so bad it stood out. It was not a rare occurrence that happened. I thought that he gave it his all. I thought they all gave it his all, but they just...
Ben, turnovers weren't because of his attitude.
Exactly. The play was happening too fast for him. It wasn't because he was like, I don't give a shit about this. You know, he totally gives a shit. He cares a lot. He was angry when he got benched at the end of the year. He's upset he had a bad season. A lot of them are. They're professionals. And you really have to think twice before you say that about professionals. And it's funny, too, because, you know, there are a lot of people, like, as fans, they kind of take a side about things, right? And you can't criticize Bergevin to a lot of people, let's say. Or you can't criticize the players, let's say. Well, hold it now. You got to take a side on this because Bergevin himself criticized the players. So as fans, you're basically caught in the middle if you're wearing a hat sweater.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to be to blame for saying something like that. And for me, I put it squarely on Bergevin. You can't talk like that to your players, especially ones that gave it their all.
Let's not forget in game one of the season, who was on the first line on the right-hand side?
Jeez, I don't know.
Hemsky.
Oh, geez, was it Hemsky?
Alex Hemsky started the season as the first line right winger.
Holy moly.
And who was on the power play on the defense?
Well,
on the first
think Hemsky
minute.
Was on the power play too, wasn't he?
No, but Mark Streit.
Started the season. Oh, right. Mark Streit, wow. Oh, boy.
So to start the season.
Geez, that seems like about 9 years ago.
Those two guys were on the first power play unit.
Mm-hmm.
Hemsky was on the first line,
mm-hmm.
and it was about attitude.
Yeah, yeah. Well said.
I'm sorry.
Well said. Yeah,
well you know,
said. Absolutely. And you know what?
I,
too, Yeah. I don't like how, I mean, I've already mentioned he threw the players under the bus with that kind of comment, but he also threw his coach under the bus too. And
exactly.
I think you and I are not completely on the same page. I agree with you that faith is death, and I think Claude does need to be a little bit more forward-thinking in his style. I agree with that. But I also have kind of digressed
yeah.
a little bit from your message completely in that I think Claude knew he didn't have a very good team, so he created Lo van Kaki. And he had to, because if he exchanged 20 chances instead of 6, they would have lost 10-2 every single game.
Just going to mention that, too, that, you know, obviously when you, you know, looking back and Hemsky and Streit starting the season and stuff, you can't put it all on Claude. There's, you know, and there were some games there as the injuries mounted and such that you looked at the lineup and said, well, you know, the fact that they were even within a goal or two, you,
is a miracle.
I have some issues with his conservative approach.
Right, like you wanted Sherbak, and I can't disagree with that. I can't disagree with wanting Sherbak to play more, get more opportunity. He was obviously butting into a really nice player, get some power play time. So I totally am on board with you on that, on safe as death when it came to lineup decisions like that. But at the same time, man, I mean, you looked at that roster and – you know, we talk a lot about coaches. We talk about styles of play. We talk about technical aspects. We talk about attitude. We talk about teamwork. We talk about heart. You know, these things are all really fun to talk about, but you know what all of these things are worth in the talent versus all of these things balance? Maybe 15%.
Yeah.
Because talent is the other 85. And the 15 is all those intangibles. You know why it's only worth 15? Because the other guy on the other team, he also cares. He also has heart. He also is getting coached technically well by, let's say, a Mike Babcock. You know what I mean? It's not like the other side is a complete idiot in those aspects of the game. The other side cares, too, has a good attitude, is taught technically what to do, has a good system. But where the separation is, you know, like last night, Pittsburgh-Philly. Pittsburgh could have gone into that game with the worst attitude in the world. And Philly,
I think there are exceptions to that, though, Brian. I know
there are exceptions.
But like, look at Vegas. You cannot convince me that lineup has anywhere near to the top 10 talent in the league.
I 100% agree with you. There are exceptions. But the rule of law is talent wins in sports.
But you know what is frustrating about that is, though, that, you know, who is the coach, right?
Great coach. Amazing coach. Not
Frank
enough.
Well, I mean, he was in the running, but why did he not get it?
Not French enough.
Wasn't French enough, was he?
Yeah. Not an amazing coach. And then he got treated so poorly in Florida. I'm really happy for him. He's a great guy. Standing on the curb waiting for a cab. Ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so everybody's thrilled. He's won the Coach of the Year before they even vote. I don't
think
anybody.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, what,
you know,
last night it was just so, you could just see, like, what a welcome.
He had him ready. He had him ready.
Oh,
and I agree with
my
that.
My goodness.
I agree with
you
that.
Know?
I agree with it that there are exceptions to the rule. Of course there are. But at the end of the day, 9 times out of 10, talent wins in sports.
What? With Weber out and with Price out and all the, you know, the not having that first line defenseman, you know, the left defenseman, not having a first line center, let's give Claude the benefit of the doubt and see. Let's see how he can do with a better team, because they will have a better team next year. But this, you know, will be going on. Like, if he misses the playoffs, it'll be his fifth year now, I believe. In a role missing the playoffs?
Claude.
The Boston team that he left was not appreciably different when Cassidy took over.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw what Cassidy did to that team.
But the roster
that
is
wasn't the, that wasn't a difference
different.
In not no, I'm just saying though, when
last
he was
year,
fired.
You're correct. Last year you're correct. But this year's roster is appreciably different.
They didn't turn over much of a team, and they were just as hot at the end of last year as they were, you know, as far as winning percentage goes this year. Like, it's been a night and day difference in winning percentage in the last 2 years. And don't forget, McAvoy was played in the playoffs last year too. So it's not like he just, you know, came out of nowhere either. But yeah, I mean, they improved their roster some this year, but it wasn't a huge turnover.
Well, they added
a first line center.
Well, they did add a first pairing D.
And
Claude didn't have McAvoy. He was still playing college.
Right. But I'm just saying, like,
the first pair D is
an entirely
big.
Different team. They They ended last year with McAvoy. So
right, only for the playoffs after he finished, very much like Backstrom
and people
this year, yeah.
There was a little different than when Claude had it, but, you know, the lineup's not much different than the one that Cassidy had at the end of the year. But, yeah.
At the end of the year. This year is quite a different lineup.
Well,
right
no,
now,
not really. I mean, they got McAvoy as opposed to...
You got a first pairing D, which is pretty significant.
Well...
And you've got about four or five young guys that are really coming of age very quickly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who?
Heinen, Greslick, McAvoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Spooner is gone now, but
anyway,
was
there. Anyway, the record
Nash,
at the end of
Riley
last year
Nash.
was 300% higher than when Claude was coaching it, and it was with no different a roster. So that was my main point, you know.
Yeah, last year
the fact
right.
was that
last year I'm totally on board with this year
yeah.
is a vastly improved team.
Well, you know,
McAvoy, two important guys.
McAvoy is the first pairing defenseman because he's with the best guy that you could be put in as a rookie, you know, like Daniel Chera. I mean, it's just like Mete came in and at 19, you put him with Weber.
Right.
He was pretty good, eh?
Right. He survived,
you know?
That way. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely, you know, that helped. But is he a first pairing defenseman if he'd played the year with Alzmaier?
Let me ask you this. If the Montreal Canadiens add a first pairing D to their roster, how many points is it worth?
Exactly. No, I mean, there's certainly I agree. They had a better team this year,
okay.
for sure.
Okay.
And
I think if Weber has a first pairing D to play with him in the ilk of McAvoy, I think the Canadiens move up 12 to 15 points, right on Adelaide, from 68 to 80.
I thought win the center, win the game, but anyway. Okay.
No, but you need a first. Well, yeah, that's worth it. No, honest to God, first pairing D, 10 points. I never thought of this, but yes, first pairing D, 10 points. Center
with
10 points.
Price playing the way he was playing,
Price,
no, I don't think.
900, 10 points.
Yeah, I don't think the way Price...
78, 88, 98, you're back to 100.
I don't think with the way that Price was playing this year, if they'd have had PK back there with Weber, that they'd have had 12 more points. But anyway.
You can't win in hockey with a 900 goalie. I'm going to agree with you 100%.
No.
You cannot. And in fact, I think this is a pretty cool thing we're doing right now. I really quite enjoy it. I think a first pairing D is worth 10 points. I think Carey Price going back to 930 from 900 is definitely. How many one goal games did they lose? That's one goal a game, 930 to 900. That's another 10 points, not 15. And a first line center is another 10 points. So let's add 30
Probably.
Points from 68. Now they're 98 and right back in the playoff picture.
Yeah, well.
I like the winners on the team. Nobody ever talks about that.
Yeah, me
except
too.
For you wrote an article and everybody hates you for it. But, no, the wingers on the team are excellent. They got top nine. They got top nine wingers for sure.
Oh, yeah. And young, too. I mean, a lot of them, you know, are young. 25 and under on the wing is, you know, pretty well set. Like with Galchenyuk and Drouin, if he plays on the wing, obviously, and Gallagher and Lekkonen and Sherbak, you go down the list. It's pretty impressive. So
Pacioretty, who they get for Pacioretty.
Well, yeah. I mean, I assume he's gone and at the draft, and that they try to add that young centerman that is so needed. And I like the look of Eriksson Ek last night from what I saw. He, you know, you can see the potential on this kid. He's just got to grow up, you know. But as I tweeted last night, I think you understand why Minnesota is reluctant to part with a guy that in 5 years' time you'd be kicking yourself for trading him for Pacioretty, and plus it would have cost more, you know. Montreal, I'm certain, was looking for a first and Ek and maybe another piece, which teams were just like Minnesota weren't willing to do at this point. They wanted to go into the playoff with the young centerman. But
well, it's going to be a very interesting summer, and the first thing on the agenda is the ball that drops on April 28th. Right now they're in in fourth draft position, but it's interesting because you can't plan for fourth because their chance of actually finishing in fourth is only about 4%, and they have almost equal measures of going higher or lower. So when we try to pretend who they're going to pick, we can't know and have a real good time, so we'll do a podcast on April 29th when we know. But for now, I'll get you to run through the best they can do is first, and the lowest they could be is seventh. So where do you stand on your top seven, and who can you see the Canadians choosing, let's say, one through three, and then five through seven?
Yeah, well, I think the top three are Dahlin, Svechnikov, and Zadina. That seems to be the consensus at this point. So with Svechnikov being number two, and we all know who number one is, the ideal fit need, and the BPA obviously is Dahlin. So, I mean, any team that gets, Dahlin is in 3 years as a contender, I think he's just going to transform, you know, he's going to be that much of an important piece on the team. Victor Hedman, you know, it'd be like adding Victor Hedman, but only perhaps even more upside, you know.
Yeah.
So he's you hope that they win the lottery. I mean, that's what all the 14, 15 teams are going to be hoping for. Mm-hmm.
And they're in good spot in fourth.
Well, sure. I mean, there's a possibility there. And, I mean, any of the big three winners, as far as I'm concerned, the other one being Tkachuk, it would be a great ad. You can they're the type of wingers that you can help build around. They aren't going to be secondary players. They're going to be, you know, key players on a team that can help you win. Ideally, I think Svechnikov and Zadina maybe have a little more skill upside than Tkachuk, perhaps a little bit, but he's such an all-round player that would fill such a need on the Habs, that big presence that can get the puck for the skilled guys like Drouin, go to the net, tip pucks, raise havoc in front of the goalie, do all the things that Gallagher can do, but only in a 6'3", 220-pound package, you know. I think that's such a need for the team as well. So any of those four guys would be great addition. So you hope that they don't end up moving back, because I think the next three guys on a lot of lists, and mine included, are right defensemen. And if there's one spot where the Canadians are really strong at this point, it's going forward and presently, it's right defense. I mean, Brett Lernout and Juleson came in, and I think they both showed that they can play in the league next year. Lernout especially surprised. Like, I always did like him, and in fact thought he should have started the season ahead of Ben on the roster. But he kind of struggled a bit this year in Laval, and it's funny, he's one of the few guys that looked better at the NHL level than he did in the minors.
It happens. It's interesting.
Yeah, we had talked the other night, and you'd mentioned Lindgren's another guy, and you know, Juleson, I believe, even looked better in the NHL than he did in the AHL. So that's kind of that was encouraging. But then you have Petrie, you have Weber coming back, and then you've got the kids, like the Brooke and Fleury both had great seasons. They were, you know, decently high draft picks and their right defensemen as well. And so it's not just the present, but the future is set at right defense. So
right. So 5, 6, 7 doesn't really fall into their wheelhouse really well if you're looking at. And who are your three that you see, 5, 6, 7?
Well, Bouchard, Dobson, and Boqvist are the three.
And they're all right. And you put Quinn Hughes
right.
a little lower?
A little lower, yeah. Mm-hmm. I just can't see, as much as the game's going towards the mobile puck movers, a team looking to have two defensemen under 5'10 in their top two, you know, as their top two left defensemen in Mete and
right.
and Hughes.
Right, and the other fellows, especially Bouchard, basically on the offensive end, offer the same that Hughes does, but are a little bit more reliable and seasoned on the defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. you know, it, you
that's
can't
why you
beat,
have him at
6'2", 220 pounds
exactly.
When you're defending, you know.
Yeah, and you know what, too? Don't forget the playoffs. People always make all these evaluations in November and December and February. Let's watch how the game changes for the next 2 months, shall we? Because physicality is going to come on back with a vengeance, as it always does in the playoffs.
Oh, for sure.
Right.
And and smaller guys find it a little tougher.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
you could see last night they were calling it looser.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, they all of a sudden the clutching and grabbing is a little more prevalent because it's just the way they call it.
It's going to be football by June, I tell you. Every year
and it gets tougher and tougher, and, I mean, it's a physical grind.
Yeah.
And a small guy by the game 90,
getting beaten up.
He's getting running out of gas. So.
Yeah, I would not put Hughes at 5, 6, or 7 either. I would definitely have him lower than the three that you mentioned. Even though they're all righties, I agree completely. But the one I'm interested about that we haven't mentioned and we've gone through possibly top eight is Wahlstrom, who I've seen as high as 5 on a list or two. But
I think he's a little high.
He's listed
as a little
center,
high.
But he's a winger, right?
He's listed some places, but yeah, he plays the wing. He's played the wing since he was in Bantam.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, you're asking Jonathan Drouin to, after one of the best junior seasons, his last year junior playing center, you know, for him to make the switch and, oh, well, he can't do it, but it's going to be okay for a guy that hasn't played
center in 4 years.
Since Bantam.
Yeah.
So, and I don't suspect, he's not a center. I mean,
right.
that's not his game. He's not a puck distributor. He's not, you know, he's not the kind that's going to come back hard and look after the centerman. And it's just not his game.
Who
he's
is your favorite center?
Winger. Well, I think the next month we're really going to, a lot's going to come out of, it's going to be very important what happens at the U18s. There's Kotkaniemi and Kuperi, who both have a chance to kind of, if they really impress, to end up being the number 5 or 6 guy on some team's list, because it seems to happen every spring that there's a guy or two that jumps up into the top 10. The other possibility, I suppose, is Veleno. If all of a sudden he puts Drummondville on his back, I believe they're still playing, and just carries them to the Q finals. There's a chance, maybe even, you know, because he's moved up a little bit on some lists. Like, I still see him outside of top 10 in most senses, but I think he's back in the mix there. And Barrett Hayton as well. I mean, if he has a standout spring here with Sue, and they go on to win, maybe win the Memorial Cup, and he's a key piece, there's also the possibility that he moves up into that 5 to 7 discussion as well. Now, if any of those guys can do that, well, and if Montreal's picking 5 or 6, and you know, and it's it. There's a strong argument that these guys could be the best player available at that point. Well, then they'll pick one of those centermen. They're still all playing, and there's still stuff to be decided.
And this sounds like the idea that I've heard you float a couple of times. If they lose the lottery and find themselves falling to six or seven, then move back, because if the right-handed defenseman is the top choice there, you move back into the 10, 11, 12 slot because somebody really needs a right-handed defenseman and another piece. Yeah.
Well, you know, like Florida or, the Islanders. And
sure,
both
would love
those defensemen that are ranked 5 to 7.
And I can think of a couple of centers there in both of the markets that would not be bad additions to the Canadian.
Sure.
So you swap a 6 for a 12 or a 6 for an 11, and you get the player you want anyway, and then you upgrade at center.
Or maybe you get the Islanders 2 picks.
That too.
Pacioretty in the 5th for the Islanders 2 picks and the negotiating rights to John Tavares?
I think a couple of people listening on the radio just drove off the road. All right, well, that sets up a very exciting April 29th, and we'll do our next podcast then, Grant. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, this has been a Habs 365 Draft Podcast. As the work continues at Recruits until July 25, guaranteed.